And this is KUOW's The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in today. White supremacist, anti-Semitic, anti-feminist, Islamophobic. Just some of the words that some people use to describe the alternative right or the alt-right movement. This movement has gotten big attention, especially in the last year or two, with prominent members throwing their support behind the president-elect, Donald Trump. But what is the alt-right movement? Here to give you some clarity is Christopher Sebastian Parker, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Washington. And he studies American politics, civil rights, and social movements. Professor Parker, welcome to the program.
It's glad to be on the program again.
Let's start with, who are the alt-right? What do we mean?
Well, the alt-right is short for alternative right, which means that it is an alternative to establishment conservatives. And so, and these are people, much like you said in your lead-in, that believe in those sort of tenets, let's just call it blanket intolerance, just for shorthand. And so it really hit the mainstream, if you will, in terms of more national public awareness recently with the election of President-elect Donald Trump. But it's been around since the proliferation of or the democratization of media, which what I mean by that is essentially the spread of social media.
How did this movement get started?
So it has its roots. Let's just call it what it is. And I'm unabashed in my criticism of it. You know, this movement goes back to its roots go back to the Klan. Right. And then more recently to the neo-Nazi movements. Right. So this is not like it's never been around. So it was called white nationalism then. It was called white supremacy before. Then it made a transition to white nationalism. Now it's called the alt-right. And so its roots go back a fair ways. But the issue is like the current name of it, alt-right, you know, it was coined by Richard Spencer, I think, 8 years ago. And so ever since then, you know, it's been called the alt-right, but the major tenets of the alt-right are roundly and thoroughly consistent with white supremacy and white nationalism.
Now, Richard Spencer does call himself a white nationalist, but Steve Bannon, the new White House strategist who called his website a platform for the alt-right, he says he's not a white nationalist. Are we misrepresenting him by not calling him what he asks to be called?
Well, first of all, what are the tenets that he ascribes to himself? And then, you know, then I'll comment on that. What does he say he is?
Well, what I know is he said he's an economic nationalist, not a white nationalist.
Okay, well, if he's an economic nationalist, that's more consistent. That falls more under the umbrella of more establishment conservatism, right? There's nothing wrong with that, if you will, you know, from a normative perspective. But to the extent that that the alt-right or some of his beliefs as he was, it suggested since he edited Breitbart News, which propounded a bunch of these intolerant views, how can one, even if he calls himself that now, how long has that been the case? He was the editor of Breitbart News, for Christ's sake, right? So how can he credibly disassociate himself from their views at this point? It seems like it's really convenient for him right now to call himself an economic nationalist.
I read at Breitbart.com an article called An Establishment Conservative's Guide to the Alt-Right, and the authors described it as having a major strain of white separatism, but that it's multifaceted, it's isolationist, it's anti-free trade, it's pro-masculinity, whatever that means to you. And they said that calling the alt-right movement white nationalist is like calling the Black Lives Matter movement anti-police.
You know what? That's, you know, instead of saying what I want to say, let's suffice it to say that's a bunch of hogwash, if you will. So what you just named, you know, economic protectionism, if you will, this pro-masculinity, those types of beliefs fit fairly comfortably underneath the establishment conservative umbrella, right? So for him to say that, yeah, there are definitely different strains to it. But think about the ways in which, you know, the ways in which this departs from establishment conservatism are its intolerant views. Now, some people would argue, some of my academic colleagues would say that conservatism just by its very nature is intolerant, which is not true. Right. Conservatism is really about slowing and managing social change, whereas these alt-right people, these alternative right people, or prior to them, these Trump supporters, these Tea Partiers, they actually wanted to go backwards in time. They not only wanted to arrest change, they wanted to go back to some time in history during which their social prestige, the group to which they belong, their social prestige went unchallenged. So this is what these alt-right people are talking about. So Spencer is the director and head of the National Policy Institute, which is about, you know, the preservation and the celebration of people with European ancestry, mm-hmm. right? Which is completely consistent with white nationalism. It's about this idea that the white race, quote unquote, if you will, is under siege. It is being overrun by these other races and groups and beliefs. And also, it's not just a racial thing, it's a religious thing as well.
Let's talk about how the media uses words. KUOW has decided to avoid using the term alt-right in favor of either white supremacist or white nationalist. One commenter on Reddit, most of our listeners, by the way, from what I've seen in social media, are on board with this. Okay. One commenter on Reddit had a concern saying, I'm fine with using the term white nationalism if what they're applying it to is white nationalism. If their intention is to avoid using alt-right as a euphemism, then it's fine. But if the intention is to use white nationalists broadly as a substitute for alt-right, it's problematic. It sounds like you disagree. You're good with KUOW's approach to this?
I'm perfectly fine with it because alt-right, you know, beyond the major differences that I discussed at the top of the show, that this idea that it has really come into vogue since the, you know, given the democratization of the media, right? And what I mean by that is social media. Beyond that, it serves as a means of making it more palatable to the unwitting public, if you will, because a lot of people don't know what alt-right means. But if you say, hey, these are white nationalists, people know what that means, right? And that has become over time less and less palatable, you know, to people, you know, to most people, right? It's, you know, even if we, you know, even a lot of white folks, many white folks don't find white nationalism to be appealing to them. They find it, quite frankly, anti-American.
Finally, Professor, do you ever struggle with the difference between the media trying to get it right to be accurate, to describe people's actions, and the media deciding what should be palatable or appealing to their audience?
Well, I think that's a problem. The media should not be an arbiter in that sense, right? I mean, the media should simply report the news, right? And let the citizens, you know, we can't assume that the citizens can't figure out their preferences. The citizens should be able to figure out their preferences on their own without the media selecting the menu for them.
That is Professor Christopher Parker, Associate Professor of Political Science at University of Washington. Did I get that right?
It's Professor.
Professor.
I got promoted.
Sorry, Professor. He studies American politics, civil rights, and social movements, and we'll demote the person who writes our introductions. It's great to talk with you again. Thanks.
Thanks for letting me be back on the show.
It's The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Will President Trump pop our liberal West Coast bubble? Washington and Oregon, California had a different election from the rest of America. Oregon Public Broadcasting reporter Conrad Wilson says our progressive leaders are concerned.
In elections around the country, Republicans won big up and down the ballot. But voters along the West Coast largely doubled down on progressive policies and candidates. Washington voters decided to increase the minimum wage. California joined the rest of the Pacific Northwest in legalizing recreational marijuana. And Oregon elected Democrat Kate Brown, the first openly bisexual governor in the country.
From a state perspective, it was a good night, but nationally, really a crazy night.
Oregon Speaker Tina Kotek is a Democrat and several years ago became the first openly gay woman in the country to lead a statehouse. Under a Trump administration, Kotek expects a resurgence of state control and innovation at the local level. Rather than looking to Washington, D.C., Kotek says she anticipates the relationship between Salem, Sacramento, and Olympia to deepen during Trump's presidency.
The change for Oregon, and probably true for California and Washington, is now we are those states in the nation that are going to be doing things differently.
The incoming Trump administration appears to be gearing up for a showdown over immigration with states. President-elect Trump campaigned on cutting federal funding for communities that refuse to cooperate with federal immigration officers.
We will end the sanctuary cities that have resulted in so many needless deaths.
The West Coast is dotted with sanctuary cities. Since the election, leaders in Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and other cities have said that regardless of the consequences, they'll protect immigrants. Portland Mayor-elect Ted Wheeler says he's asked immigration attorneys to see if there's anything that can be done to strengthen the safeguards already in place. Los Angeles Police Chief Charlie Beck told Southern California Public Radio it's up to the federal government to enforce its immigration laws.
Immigration is not the job of local law enforcement, immigration enforcement, that it is the job of the federal government, and they should do their job, and they should not rely on me to do it for them.
Clearly, the hope among many West Coast progressives is that the federal government will continue to leave them alone. Todd Donovan, a political science professor at Western Washington University, says the fear is that the Trump administration won't.
How much will they let Seattle and Portland and San Francisco continue to pursue those sort of progressive local policies? Or how much are they going to kind of try to come in and use the weight of the federal government to stop that, whether it's, you know, trying to get local law enforcement to be asking for documentation, or whether it's, you know, what will the Trump administration do with legal marijuana? Those are all up in the air right now.
For some, looking at the West Coast as one big progressive region fully opposed to Trump is an oversimplification.
Washington State is not blue. There's one big blue dot of which 80% of the rest of the state is red. Oregon's the same way.
Matt Manweller is a Republican member of the Washington House. He represents the 13th Legislative District, just north of the Tri-Cities, and teaches political science and constitutional law at Central Washington University. Manweller says some good has come out of this divisive election cycle.
I have had more liberal Democrats come to me and say, talk to me about your world. I obviously don't walk in it, and I don't understand it. And that has actually started some very powerful conversations that could lead to some form of compromise.
After the election, President Obama called on people to give Trump a chance to govern. But in cities along the West Coast, fears of what's to come have led to an unceasing series of protests about what Trump's election means for one of the most consistently progressive parts of the country. I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. How do you mix family, politics, and stuffing? Donald Trump has people riled up going into the holiday, so do we address the election at the family gathering or pretend politics don't exist? I know where I come down on this. What about you? Would you please call us right now at 206-543-5869? That's 206-543-KUOW, because we're going to take a few of your phone calls live. Tell us your story. When have you seen holiday politics go well? When have you seen it go so horribly wrong? We will take your phone calls live right now. 206-543-5869, 543-KUOW. We're also tweeting at KUOW if you just want to be concise. And we're going to bring in our friend Luke Burbank, host of Live Wire on KUOW. Hey, Luke.
Hello, Bill.
You got your own story, and we're going to listen to callers together.
Yes, I have stories. I think I'm the only other public radio host who comes from a family the size of yours, Bill.
Yes.
So with just the sheer number of people and opinions that sort of cycle through the Burbank household on Thanksgiving, there's bound to be some friction.
Yes, and you have a scriptural wrinkle in that as well that I'm not dealing with in my family.
That's right. We don't even argue as much about politics as we do about the things that politics are meant to address.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense?
I think
And we'll get into this in a little bit, but
okay.
It's not like Republicans versus Democrats. It's people who think I'm going to hell versus people who don't think I'm going to hell.
Okay, let's you and me and him talk Thanksgiving and hell, possibly, depending on how it's gone for you. Tell us your story at 543-5869. We hit the streets last week and we asked people in the university district what concerns they have when it comes to talking with family over the holiday.
I'm nervous to talk about politics because I know it's going to come up because I always have to try to get in there and talk to my dad about it, even though we always end up like fighting.
My family dynamic's interesting. So my mom's white. I'm half black.
I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that I've been thinking about lately is that he doesn't believe in climate change. And I have this really big obsession with becoming a dad in the near future. And I think to myself, like, Dad, how can you be screwing over your grandchildren?
But I think when I'm talking with my family, it is a little bit more sensitive because to know that some of the most racist people I know are my family members is actually really painful.
Well, I'm from Texas and my family's all from Texas and in Texas, and they are red-blooded Republicans and proud to be such. And I am a Democrat, so I'm the blue sheep in the family.
Since my grandpa is a white male and he doesn't see that everyone who's a person of color in our family is treated differently and acts differently in different settings than he does. I don't know if I would be brave enough to approach him with that conversation. I think if anybody is, it's going to be you or Kiki. She's my little sister is a little more than I am.
My parents are divorced, and my mom and her family are Republicans, and they've expressed kind of opposition to same-sex marriage in America. And my father is gay. I don't feel like I can say anything because I'm outnumbered. But on the other hand, I don't want to stay quiet because I want to, you know, say what I believe. I want to stand up for what I believe in.
We always end up fighting, but I don't want to stay quiet because I want to say what I believe. This is exactly why I don't talk politics at Thanksgiving. I realize I may be in the minority. I recommend you also put your head in the sand or in the stuffing. But Luke Burbank, are you attempting the political mix?
Well, the dynamics in my family are the line that things break down along is my parents and my aunts and uncles, what you consider to be maybe the bit older generation, mm-hmm. on one side of thing, and then the kids and their spouses, because most of us are married, on the other side. Meaning the adults at this get-together that I'm going to be going to this week, it's 18 to 4 young okay. people. So the adults, I think, have, in fact, not just they haven't just sort of been hoping that we wouldn't talk politics. There was an official request made through Facebook to members of the family from the older generation uh-huh. that we not talk about politics.
Of course, because you've got numbers.
That's
and they
exactly
don't.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're
going to honor that?
Well, based on the Electoral College, somehow they have more people at Thanksgiving. I don't get it,
it's
but
weird.
It's a quirk in our electoral system. So going into this Thanksgiving get together, there I think is definitely going to be an attempt to leave politics alone. But I come from Irish Catholic people who are not able to keep any thoughts or feelings inside.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at like 8 hours of food prep together.
Yeah.
All of us gathered around in the kitchen. This
oh,
is,
so you're doing that. You're doing the full-on togetherness, not just the show up.
Thanksgiving is a high holiday in the Burbank household because when I was a little kid, we didn't really celebrate Christmas. Hmm. So Thanksgiving took on all of this importance. So everybody is showing up at my folks' house tonight. And then tomorrow morning, get up at the crack of 8 o'clock, watch the Macy's parade, yeah. and then start making the food together. So this is a really long period of time for no one to crack.
Yes.
And it's at the very front, certainly of the younger people, my sisters. I have 4 sisters and 2 brothers. And for the people of our age, I'm the oldest of the family. It's right at the front of our brain. It's going to be so hard to chop carrots and not say, if you nick your finger, welcome to Trump's America.
Right. I'm chopping onions. I haven't cried like this since.
Right.
Everyone's like, is he going to say it?
Right. Yeah. So I'm not sure if this detente is going to hold or not. What I do know is that historically these arguments in my family have never ended well.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into arguments about a lot of things. The rules of Scrabble.
Yeah. Well, now that's worth arguing about.
If somebody was cheating at charades,
mm-hmm.
like when the Christmas music should come on. I'm a very strong believer that it is not until the Thanksgiving dishes have been cleared.
Okay, that's
it. So there are so many things to argue about. And what I've learned, though, is that no one ever has their mind changed on anything of any importance by being harangued over the Thanksgiving Day table. So I've got a theory, which is just try to, I think, be the best version of yourself.
Hmm.
Because what you will do is you will put a face on a political persuasion. So it'll be harder for if you could argue with someone across the turkey and try to talk them into believing your way of seeing the world, you're probably not going to have success.
Mm.
But if you're just a generally great person to be around, it's going to be hard for them to put all people who support that political ideology that you do. It's going to be hard for them to just put them all in this camp of like a bunch of bleeding heart liberals or a bunch of heartless conservatives. It's harder for people to do that when they have a real person that identifies with whatever that thing is. So just be that.
Okay, so then let's argue about what it means to be the best version of yourself. Let's argue until we resent one another. With your help, tell us a story of how political disagreement has gone well around the holidays or gone south of cheese. 206-543-5869. What lesson did you learn? What lesson did you learn that we can benefit from? 206-543-5869. Let's go to Kate in Tacoma. Hey, Kate.
Hi.
What's your story, Kate?
For Thanks for bringing this topic up. I just wanted to share a little story. I'm going to dinner with friends and their family. I have no idea what their politics are, and I got a call this morning from a good friend of mine doing the same thing, going to Thanksgiving dinner with her longtime friends, but she called me this morning from, like, hidden away in a closet or the bathroom or something, whispering into the phone saying, oh my God, they're all Trumpers. What should I do? So I think it's a big question when you don't know what the politics are going to be around the table.
That's Thanksgiving Russian roulette. What did you tell your friend?
We just talked about it, and she said, I'll call you later. I think they're coming now. So it was like, it felt like an espionage call or something.
We need to get back with your friend and find out how this went.
Tell your friend to blink twice into the phone if she's tied up. It's not going to help. But
okay, will do. Hey, thanks. I'm listening in.
Good luck, Kate. We're talking to Sharon in Oak Harbor on KOW. Sharon, what's your story?
Well, we've never had a problem with politics in the family. We've kind of all seen kind of liberally, progressively, et cetera. But this election, some of the family members voted differently because they wanted to change and thought that it was the only way to go. And I have a son-in-law who's from the Caribbean, and therefore I have grandchildren who are seen as brown. And so for their family, it was very, very upsetting to think that some of the other family members voted for Trump, who they saw as someone who would bring danger to their family. So it was very, very, very disruptive. And what we did is agree to handle it. It was important to talk about it, but important maybe to talk about it one-on-one with when they were in a place where they were able to really listen to each other and to hear what one another had to say rather than be in a defense mode, anger mode, and who's going to win. So with that as the background and Thanksgiving coming up, the couple, my son and daughter and son-in-law who are hosting it, send out a protocol that said, you know, we're not going to say politics or issues cannot be brought up, but what we are going to say is, while you're in our home, we want things to be done with gentleness and civility and generosity toward one another. So if those kind of conversations come up, that's how we will deal with them. I think what was important for us as a family is to realize that we had to listen deeply to one another. Some people were afraid to say what they were worried about. And so what we've decided to do is it's important to now begin to listen to one another from that place of just listening to hear, which I think is majorly missing in our society. So that's how we're dealing with it, and we'll see how Thanksgiving goes tomorrow.
It sounds a little ambiguous because you said that you want to just talk about it one-on-one, but is it okay to bring it up in the group as long as, and just you hope that we all have the same definition of civility?
That's the Thanksgiving protocol is, yes, it's okay to bring it up if it comes up. And let's try to remember that we're adults and we can hear each other and that we don't have to go into fighting, defend mode, that we want to be able to just hear from the other person where they're at. Why, if they voted opposite to what I voted for, what was it in it that took their vote? And also, I think some people who voted, and now are seeing the possible impact, they're probably would like to say, why did I goof? We don't know, but yeah, they can be brought up, but what really is important is that we're encouraging each other to talk about where they're at and why they're there and why they voted the way they did and what they want for the country and the family. And we found that when doing it one-on-one, because I have 9 children, so we have a large family.
Everybody in this room has 9 kids in their family.
I know. Well, that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Not much anymore. But, you know, I think what we have all come out of it with is, the power and the necessity to begin to hear one another in our differences in a way that we're not debating, but we're there just to hear.
But, Sharon, I want to hear from Luke, too. But, Sharon, my question is, what is your goal? Can you honestly say that your goal to change someone's mind? Because
No. In
my experience, when people say we just want to listen, boy, it's hard to not actually want to convince the other person of something.
No. When our goal is to listen, and in the listening, just let that person be heard, and they see the world yellow, I see the world blue. And if we can't do that in diversity, I mean, we're not ever going to all see the world the same way. So we're all going to act differently. But what's the common is, do we care about our family? We have different ways of hoping it comes to be. But if we can't listen just to hear one another without changing another person's mind, I mean, that's never going to happen. We are diverse, unique. We see things differently. And how can we build a culture in which diversity becomes enrichment rather than alienation?
Sharon, thank you for that.
That's our goal in our family.
I think that that's a really good point that Sharon's making, this idea of maybe we can call it radical listening. Mm-hmm. This idea that you're not just waiting for your chance to throw in your little opinion or fact that is going to completely corner the other person in the argument, but taking a moment to actually listen. I used to be actually a much more conservative person than I sort of currently am. And I know that back when I was very conservative, I didn't get up in the morning and think, boy, how can I make this country a bad place? And now that I tend to be more progressive, I don't get up in the morning and think, how can I make this country a worse place? Wherever somebody is on the political spectrum, they're actually doing their best. They're actually supporting ideas that they think are going to make the country better. We might disagree about what those are, but like listening to somebody and actually trying to really hear them, I think is a super powerful thing. I play a lot of poker, and they say in poker, one of the most powerful things you can do is fold. People think it's like betting more than the other person. Folding, knowing when it's time to go for it and when it's time to not go for it, is a hugely valuable skill set to have in poker. And I think in conversations, listening is a really powerful thing also.
Here's my concern, though. What are the odds that everybody around that Thanksgiving table also practices radical listening? It seems to me the odds are so low that I'd rather practice radical how about them Huskies, or radical how are your kids doing, how's April doing, how's Asia doing, radical anything but politics, because you're just together for this short time, and I say punt.
But you could also be missing an opportunity.
Punt into the Palouse wind.
That's right. Speaking of the Apple Cup, I think you could be missing an opportunity, though, if you don't talk about it at all, because this might be, for some of our listeners, one of the few times since the election that they've actually been in really close contact with somebody who has a totally different political worldview than them.
Mm-hmm.
And to just talk about, boy, those Black Friday sales, those are going to be some humdingers. Like, that could be a missed opportunity. And to the question of, if everyone's going to be able to practice this art of listening to each other, maybe not, but I bet the chances of a civil conversation go up tremendously the more people that are doing that. Like, you know, it takes two to tango. And so if most of the people are just listening and really talking from the heart but not getting totally out of control with it, I have a feeling that that will bring the whole conversation into some sort of order. Can I tell you who's not practicing radical listening, Bill? My parents, regarding Costco. I need to read you very quickly. I know we have other things to talk
this
about.
This is clearly bugging you, so I'd like
While we've been here talking, this text message chain that my family's on, which has been titled Gobble Gobble.
Of course.
Has been just lighting up. And it's basically my
Gobble till you wobble, by
my
the way.
Parents trying to – my job is to pick up the last-minute provisions, like the sparkling cider, the rolls, some stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents keep giving me these updates on what time the Costco in Silverdale is open until. And I keep telling them, that's fine. I'm not going to go to the Costco. It's going to cost me $10 more. It's totally worth it. Every time I say that, they come back. Then my mom's response to me saying I wasn't going to go to Costco, Luke, Costco is open till 8:30. It will slow down by 7 or so. And then I respond. I said, Mom, I can't stress this enough. I'm not going to Costco. And then my dad says, Luke and I will stop at Costco on our way to the house from the ferry tonight. They are not listening to me about not going to Costco. It's not worth it to me.
You're making my point. What are the odds if they can't listen around Costco that they're going to listen around?
Well, politics Steve is only Bannon. The future of our country. Costco, I mean, that's a difference of 80 cents.
Fair enough.
If you pay full retail for that sparkling cider.
Good point. We heard a moment ago from, by the way, we're taking your story at 206-543-5869, 543-KUOW. We just heard from Sharon in Oak Harbor, and now Margaret in Seattle. Margaret, do you have a story for us of Thanksgiving and family and politics? Margaret, are you there? Margaret is carefully weighing.
Are you there, Margaret? It's me, God.
You should weigh your words. This is important. Okay, how about we hear? We did go to Seattle's University District and asked for some advice, suggestions on mixing family politics turkey. Here you go.
Just breathe. Just don't even worry about it. If the topic comes up, just take the higher road and just kind of shrug it off. There shouldn't be a food fight on Thanksgiving, I think.
I think advice I would give people is that to stay open and like to hear other people's point of views, but also state your own opinions because it can change the conversation and kind of help people understand kind of where you're coming from.
So if I don't really want to necessarily instigate tough conversations, but I feel like we need to at this point. But I'm also avoiding it by being at work on Thanksgiving, so...
See?
Part of how you solve issues like this with hate and bigotry is you talk about it and you get viewpoints so you understand where everybody's coming from. If you look at it, you know, more divisively and like this is your enemy and us versus them kind of concept, you're never going to reach a conclusion, at least not one that's safe.
If we can't discuss things close to our hearts, how are we going to be human? You know, we need to be able to express that emotion and have a safe place to do so. And I think it does need to start with the families.
It's about love and just understanding. And if it's a topic that really makes you angry, then don't bring it up.
This sounds so cliched, but really being open-minded. And from whatever perspective you come from, really just at least giving it a shot.
One of the aunts tends to come in and say, let's stop this, typically with coffee or pie or Jameson.
I mean, I honestly would just say, you know that other people feel differently and that that's okay, and you don't have to agree. A lot of my conversations just end in let's agree to disagree.
If agree to disagree is your best case scenario and the worst case scenario is tears and broken dishes and heading out into the night high on Jameson, I would argue, what's the point? But I think I know you feel differently. I respect our differences.
You have to have a backup plan, though, Bill, which is maybe probably the smartest approach is to just sort of leave it alone. But there's a great likelihood that it will still come up. And then what are you going to do?
That is true.
I'm promoting a belt and suspenders approach to this Thanksgiving. Okay. And I have one more idea I want to throw out there, which is instead of trying to win the argument, like get the other person to admit that who they voted for president was the wrong choice or that the country is doomed for whatever reason, maybe just try to plant an acorn of knowledge. Listen to them. Tell them how you really feel, also respectfully. Mm-hmm. And if you can just drop one little seed into their mind about looking at this thing differently in one small way, you might come back next year and there might be a mighty oak tree of this metaphor is breaking down. But the point is, maybe don't try to like totally win the argument as much as just get one point across and just let it lie.
Let it lie. I like that. Okay, let's hear from Joaquin in Seattle. Joaquin, what's your experience? Do you have a story?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when we look at the United States of America, and I'm background from East Africa, it's totally different about politics. We talk so much about politics, but I'm so proud to be here in the United States when I look at, and we have so much pressure when we choosing, but after we choose, the election is over, everything is, they're going to make peace in between them, the two against each other gone, and at last, that kind of thing they do. So I'm just, want to advise everybody, you know, please don't take for granted. The country we are in, it is absolutely a brilliant people, and we agree, we go for everything for granted. You know, we just have to go for the flow, and say, let's give this guy a chance. Let's see what he's going to make for our country, for our beautiful and wonderful country, what he's going to do. That's what I'm going to say, and I really thank you.
Thank you so much, Joaquin, in Seattle. Give Trump a chance. We'll have plenty of time to get back together at St. Patrick's Day.
It's also
Easter and assess.
When the Jameson really flows.
Really?
Talking about Easter.
Yes.
How we do it at my house. I think Joaquin makes also a very good point, Bill, which is like, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing, particularly in my social circles, a lot of hair pulling out. This is still a pretty awesome country to live in. And the fact that there is a peaceful transition of power is pretty amazing. And so I think keeping that in perspective is an important thing too.
Right. It's not necessarily papering over your worries, but if you can find something, as Joaquin did, something to say that is optimistic, that's hopeful at least, going into the dark days of winter or the bright morning of Trumpism, depending on your point of view. If you can find that, as you're saying, and plant an acorn of knowledge and then come up with something upbeat.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to.
Let's keep it in perspective a little bit. This is still a pretty good place to live, in my opinion, warts and all.
Luke Burbank, it's going to be a pretty good place to be in a couple of weeks or so at the Neptune.
Yeah, it is.
In Seattle. Tell us about your Live Wire show.
Well, I host a show called Live Wire that's on KUOW on Saturday afternoons. It's a variety
5
show.
O'clock.
That's right. And on December 9th, we're going to be over at the Neptune. We're going to be recording the show live in front of a live audience. We've got Maria Semple there, who I know you've had on your show before.
Yeah.
Misha Collins, who's an actor. He's on the TV show Supernatural. He's an all-around interesting guy. And Giassi Ross, who I know about from this show.
From Week in Review.
That's
right. Of the show.
So all-around amazing person as well. And we've got some music happening, and I'll be there, I think.
You think?
Presuming I'm still hosting the show, whatever, 9 or so days from now, I will be there. We hope to see everyone in the KUOW listening audience as well. You can get tickets by going to livewireradio.org.
We hang on a moment because we're going to talk Apple Cup with someone who knows a lot about the Cougars, and then we can follow that with people who know less.
Nothing would make me happier.
That would be great. Hang on to KUOW's The Record. If politics is going to be fraught at your Thanksgiving, there's always football to talk about. The Huskies play the Cougars in the Apple Cup on Friday, and it's actually going to mean something this year with the Pac-12 championship appearance or even a big bowl game, maybe even a college football appearance, a playoff appearance on the line for both of these teams this year. The Cougars beat reporter at the Seattle Times, Stephanie Lowe, gave us the scouting report on WSU.
They are a team that went into the season with everyone thinking they would be very good. They lost the first couple games and then miraculously rallied and went on an 8-game win streak and lost last week. But now they're playing in the Apple Cup against Washington. That's billed as probably the biggest Apple Cup in decades because the winner basically gets to the Pac-12 championship game.
Right, and the Cougars are ranked 20-something, right, in the nation?
They are. I mean, in the last 2 years, Mike Leach has really turned around the program. You know, they went from being kind of a moribund Pac-12 doormat team to now being ranked and challenging for the league championship, which is pretty miraculous when you think about the fact that, you know, before Leach got there, they won, like, what, 1, 2, 3 games a year?
Tell us about Mike Leach. He sounds eccentric, the pirate of the Palouse.
Mike Leach is a character. I mean, you never really know what he's going to say. Like, he has such a varied range of interests, and he doesn't care what anyone thinks of him. So, number one, he can engage you in a bunch of different subjects, you know, ranging from the presidential campaign to, I don't know, what his favorite Thanksgiving food is. And he'll answer each of these questions with the same sort of thought and reflection that he would put into something that you would ask him about his football team.
Yeah, you never know what he's going to say. He doesn't care what people think. He sounds like a certain president-elect.
Well, he's endorsed that president-elect, so I guess they're friends.
I understand he's got a Trump photograph in his office. How do his players react to his Trump love?
They haven't really reacted in any discernible way. I mean, I think the big thing here is that Coach Leach has been very vocal about saying that he respects freedom of speech and everyone's, you know, freedom of opinion. And so while he might have his political opinions, he doesn't try to push those on his players. And, you know, some players have been vocal about how they feel about things. And so I think from that standpoint, his political beliefs haven't really bled into the football team. And I think he supports his players' rights to think whatever they want.
But if fans want to make this game political, they're free to.
Well, they probably will. I mean, there's a lot of fans who I know are on like one or the other side of the spectrum, just at least from interacting with people on Twitter. So, yeah, I'm sure fans will probably do that.
I haven't seen the Cougar quarterback's long-form birth certificate, so I'm withholding judgment. Both teams are good this year. So remind us, we've got bowls, we've got playoffs. What is at stake in this Apple Cup?
Well, basically, this game acts as a play-in to the Pac-12 championship game. The winner gets to go to the championship game on December 2nd in Santa Clara.
Bowl game implications?
Somewhat. I mean, if UW wins this game and gets to the Pac-12 championship and wins the Pac-12 championship, the Huskies might
pretty well end up in the college football playoff. If Washington State wins this game and gets to the Pac-12 championship and wins the Pac-12 championship, they will probably get to their first Rose Bowl in more than a decade.
What's the weather factor this time in the Palouse?
It'll be cold and probably rainy, but both teams are from the state of Washington. That's not going to bother them at all.
Cold and maybe rainy. And it's been snowing in the passes, so fewer Husky fans are going to make it through.
That's true, but I don't think that will really affect the attendance from the west side of the state, because this is a huge game and it's been cold out for months, and I think people will find a way to get there.
That was Stephanie Lowe, the Cougars beat writer for the Seattle Times. Again, Huskies playing the Cougars in Pullman at 12:30 on Friday, which, Luke Burbank, you were pointing out to me is a weird time.
Well, yeah, you know, I was chatting with producer Andy Hurst, who's a Coug, I should mention, and he pointed out that this is an odd time. 12:30 in the afternoon tomorrow, or rather on Friday, is a weird time for the Apple Cup. What it means is if you're a Washington State student and you live on the west side of the mountains and you went back home for Thanksgiving, you got to somehow try to get back to the Palouse by 12:30. I wonder if that and the snow, if that's going to have an impact on what the turnout is or exactly who the crowd is there, if you get more Husky fans than you normally would. What I do know about the Apple Cup is whichever team is going in with everything to lose, which some years has been the Cougars, some years has been the Huskies, that team will almost always lose, crushing the hearts of their fans. So as a Husky fan, I have low expectations.
And you can get over the passes somehow after your Thanksgiving family interaction, fueled by rage,
yes, to
be able to get through.
Yes. You can, and then go to scream your lungs out for 4 hours as some kind of catharsis.
What's left of them, exactly. Luke Burbank's going to see you at the Neptune Theater on December 9th.
Yes, speaking of scream your lungs out,
mm-hmm,
come help us make a public radio show. December 9th, Friday night, the Neptune. You can go to livewireradio.org for ticket information.
Luke Burbank, always good to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill.
Hosted the podcast TBTL and Live Wire on KUOW Saturdays at 5 o'clock. You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Donald Trump has released his action plan for the first 100 days in office, and immigration is in there, and the Supreme Court is in there, and the Keystone XL pipeline. He does say leave the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but he does not mention the North American Free Trade Agreement. Vaughn Palmer, columnist with the Vancouver Sun, what do you make of that?
Oh, we're so excited he forgot to mention us. The last week, the big story up here was a leaked memo that CNN got its hands on, indicating that Trump's advisors had targeted NAFTA, softwood lumber, our trade with the United States, and livestock issues for trade action against Canada. So there was a lot of hand-wringing going on. But the Trump video on the first 100 days, we're not on the list for that stuff, so maybe we're in the second 100 days. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, every word from the president-elect and his advisors is, of course, being followed very closely up here, because our trade and economic relations with the United States are critical to the Canadian economy.
His transition team does appear to target softwood lumber and livestock?
Yes. That was on the list. Uh-huh. And I mean, the softwood lumber is, I would say, almost inevitable, because the trade between Canada and the United States was managed under an agreement for 10 years. Well, that agreement expired in mid-October, so there's a clear way for Americans, the American lumber industry, to come back and accuse Canada of subsidized and take trade action against us. It's wide open. Lumber is not part of NAFTA. It was excluded by the two governments that put together. Canada and the United States excluded it by agreement, so it's not covered by NAFTA. Some of these livestock issues, which involve labeling of food products and so forth, are there. When you look at the list of concerns that Trump has raised, I think, as I said last week, I think there are more concerns raised by Trump about the trading relationship with Mexico under NAFTA than the trading relationship with Canada. But if we're talking about reopening the treaty, of course, both countries would be affected.
Also, Vaughn, I understand it might get harder, or at least not get easier, to cross the U.S.-Canada border?
Yeah, under the Obama administration, post 9/11, Canada and the United States have been working toward expedited access to each other's countries at border crossings, and also at airports. So if I fly to the United States out of the city of Vancouver, out of Vancouver International Airport now, I clear entry to the United States with American officials who work in Vancouver International Airport. So we have expedited, they call it pre-clearance, but it's clearance. Just clearance occurs in Canada instead of the United States. So you get off the plane in San Francisco or Seattle or wherever, you just walk out of the terminal, just as if you, because you've already cleared.
Mm-hmm.
So the two countries have, Bill, have been working toward that in a whole bunch of ways, through airports, cruise ships. Another way they've talked about is moving goods across the border. And, yeah, there's been some indication, certain amount of anxiety up here, that all of that will be undone or stalled, or stuff that hasn't actually been done but is only in the works will be revisited, because Trump seems to have a very different attitude about it.
And we're going to talk next time about the possibility of a taxpayer bailout for newspapers. Vaughn, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Vaughn Palmer with one of those newspapers, the Vancouver Sun. Always good to talk with you. Thanks.
Bye-bye, Bill.
Now, we were talking about political partisanship and holidays, and just want to let you know, if you're not careful with your partisanship, you might not get a family holiday. KOW correspondent Anna King brings you the story of a local family.
Jessica Brady and Jeremy Holmes are sister and brother. Grown with their own families, they both live in the Seattle area.
I'm feeling nervous about Thanksgiving.
Anytime we have a meal at my family's house, there's always a prayer before the meal.
Jeremy and Jessica's parents are conservative Christians. Their mom declined to speak on tape for this story, but says she loves their children and their families. Jeremy and Jessica both voted for Hillary Clinton. Their parents didn't. On election night, Jeremy's mother called him. He had been in a wreck that night with some minor damage to his car. His mom was checking on him. And in that conversation, Jeremy's mother told him she had written in her presidential vote. And they argued. After that, Jeremy and his wife decided to have their own quiet veggie Thanksgiving. He says he's partly relieved, but there's another part of him that's
bummed, you know, because I love being in big groups of people. I love being with lots of friends and my loved ones. And I do care about my family and I'd love to spend some time with them. But I think it's just too much right now. So
Jessica is hosting the Thanksgiving. Jeremy is skipping. She's having their parents over. When she found out that her brother Jeremy and his family weren't coming, she started inviting dozens of friends.
Just because I was kind of hoping to have a buffer and have lots of people around, but it just ended up not working out.
All their friends were busy with their own plans and families. So it'll just be her, her husband, their two boys, and her parents. She loves that her mother volunteers in her children's classrooms every week and is a good grandmother. But on Thanksgiving Day, Jessica dreads getting cornered.
And I can't get pulled away by other guests who need something or, you know, So the getting cornered thing is definitely the scary part.
Jessica says she still attends her church and identifies as Christian, but she's also grown more liberal in her views over the last several years. For Jessica, her differences with her parents don't begin or end with the election. But the election and the holiday highlight the work she'd like to do on their relationship.
The hardest thing that they could do is just like preach at me and read me Bible verse after Bible verse about why I'm wrong about things. And, and that has happened to a certain extent in the past.
She wants Thanksgiving to be different.
I think both of my parents are amazing people. So it's just trying to figure out how we can be in each other's lives. And yeah, that's just really hard.
She plans on setting a ground rule we hear a lot at holidays: no politics. Jeremy's rule is that this year, he and his wife need space from the holiday gathering.
I do want to get to a point where we can be in the same room together and that kind of stuff, because I think that's best for the grandkids and best for everybody involved.
He just needs a little more distance from election day. Jessica wants to take the first step now.
I think it starts by actually being together and inviting my family over on Thanksgiving, even though it's scary and a little overwhelming. if we're not together, then how are we going to start the process?
She says maybe it's those little conversations that happen over time. I'm Anna King reporting.
We hope you enjoy your holidays. Thanks for tuning in to KOW's The Record, which you know is always your friend when you get around to us, because you can download The Record or The Week in Review, Speakers Forum. You can get KOW's podcasts on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in today.